this interesting melding process goes on between us and our friends, isn't there? So the people we relate with,
it
we,
has
we
to be,
up,
yeah.
Yeah, and they we support each other and grow into each other.
Yeah, yeah. And particularly activists that.
Mm. That's it, right.
You sort of support each other, and yeah. without each other, it would be that much harder.
Mm.
And it's not necessarily that either Hildy or Miriam were there all the time or anything like that. It's just bits of the story intersect.
Mm.
But certainly Phyllis, I mean, she was an amazing woman.
Yeah.
And some of the things that she did in her lifetime and just. But in terms of you, this recording, so just highlights, I guess, that you think would be interesting in Irene's story.
Yeah. So going back to Vienna, I went there as a four-year-old. Life was fairly broad-brushed out, I suppose, as far as what I remember. I don't remember going there, really. I remember being there. The amazing contrast of going from a country school, a place called Malamalua, to the middle of an ancient city and not being allowed to walk on the grass. But from here, the parks were, you stayed on the paths because the grass would die. If you walked on it, people would shout at you and run, saying, get off the grass, and we wandered onto it. And so we just went, thought all the parks and so on were wonderful. The sculptures and enjoyed the culture as a four-year-old.
And how long were you there for?
2 years. Yeah, I think it was around that. Yeah. So I started school there and I went to kindergarten as well. Yeah. And Jim was our teacher to begin with. He sort of homeschooled us. I think that the outstanding memory I have of the multicultural group that we lived with was a UNESCO or United Nations celebration of the people of the world. They got all us toddlers to run around an athletic track in national costume.
Oh.
And there was this, young kids that just enjoy each other's company anyway. It was epitomised unity and comradeship, really. I'm not sure what my parents came up with for a national costume.
Do you have any concept of why you were there? Why Jim was working there?
Yeah, we knew that they were working for peace and that he was a translator.
And was that unusual? You know, did you have other friends whose parents worked for peace?
We lived in, I lived with my parents, we lived in 32 different houses. Friends are a transitory concept.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know anyone more than 2 years. So every 2 years we were able to reinvent ourselves, what we presented to the world, start a new script with a new group of people, choose a new role. They were a blank slate to us. We didn't know them. We had to learn new people. I think the only people we knew consistently were our cousins, because Jim's brother married Irene's sister. Mm. So, and they had kids in between ours, I think. And so we knew them through the years, but everyone else was the others, and a majority of them were straight-laced.
Yeah.
You know, while we're in Vienna, they were the kids we played with were either in the same building or they were working for the same group. How does that relate to your question? Yeah. Pretty close. Yeah.
So it was an unusual thing. It wasn't commonplace.
For
people to be activists in that era?
Oh, very uncommon, yeah. I went to a Catholic school and they just threw hellfire and brimstone at me and everyone, you know. It was very autocratic and tight discipline and lots of aggression and fear and loathing. It was ghastly. My parents said, well, that's life. Those are the people we work amongst. Or live amongst, not work amongst, yeah.
How did you get to be in a Catholic school? I would have thought that would have been the antithesis of what your parents...
I don't think there were alternative schools in those days.
Oh.
1958? Yeah. I think we also had the thing where our task in life was to work within society, not to hide from it.
Yes.
And so we had to dress respectably and help Jim fit into the education department. That was always a burden upon us, that we had to do what, you know, for us, we could see the peace and love society developing in our minds and our hearts, but we weren't allowed to behave like that. We weren't allowed to have long hair and all that because it would reflect on Jim's career, and he was trying to stay within the structure and work from the inside out.
Did you understand that as a child?
Yeah. Yeah, didn't like it. It wasn't, you know, I left home and stepped outside it just straight away, bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I was already stepping out. They were letting me express myself as a 17-year-old.
So with the whole, I don't know, the whole construct of being in a Catholic school and having to, I don't know, comply with all of that and then come home and find something different, was that, you know, a bit bipolar?
Oh, it was really hard. I hated it. I was the worst student in the class for a while, and by the time I left, I was the best student in the class. So I'd work out how to fit within their parameters, and they could see that I was basically wanted to be a nice person. And
did you look forward to each move, or were you reluctant to? But it obviously you had to go.
It was a win and a loss. That was really exciting. Like one stage we were living in Otorohanga, which is a dairy, Waikato dairying area, very comfortable, middle class, upper class, Pākehā culture. My parents looked at a job in Kalgoorlie. And so the contrast was, whoa, how exciting to
live in. Did you actually live in Kalgoorlie?
No, the job didn't quite come off.
Oh.
Yeah, but we were going to move in there when I was 16, I think. But it epitomises the excitement of going to a whole new place. Yeah. You know, we'd skip all over the country. Yeah. It
would have felt like that.
Yeah, and living amongst Aboriginal people and so on. And, of course, then all the friends we'd built up over 2 years were going to lose, just gone. I never kept touch with people from the place before as a child. They're just gone. So, it was very sweet and sour mix. Yeah.
Have you ever written this down yourself?
No. No, just starting to write stories.
Yeah, because it is an interesting way to grow up.
Mm. Yeah, well, my partner Jill grew up in a street and lived there all her life, and her parents had lived there just before she was born. So she knows people from birth, and she knows their families, and she knows where they've gone, has that extended whānau association or family association.
And it gives you roots, doesn't it?
Yes, and it's constraining because people remember that as a 10-year-old you were this sort of person and they expect you to still be like that.
Yeah.
It's whereas I get the opposite. Yeah, I don't have, or I haven't had roots till I've moved around now for the last 35 years and I've got a sustainable hardwood forest that's that old, so I've literally got lots of roots.
Yes, yeah. And do you plan on staying there?
I do, yeah.
So is it the longest that you've lived anywhere?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2 years before. 2 years anyway. Yeah, that was maximum.
All your life?
Yeah.
So it really shaped you?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And Irene had to go through that too. I think Jim, being a public speaker type person, could fit into lots of groups to his level, you know. Base level was fairly high. He didn't relate with a lot of practical things. He could click into communicating with people really well, whereas Irene had to work out where the kindergarten was and how to fit in with this and the shopping and all those pedestrian day-to-day things.
The basics of day-to-day life.
New neighbours, get to know the new housewife next door.
That must have been incredibly difficult, particularly when you have babies, which she did fairly often.
And she was a very shy person.
Yes.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, she's not now.
No.
But as a young mum, she was shy.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, she was very brave.
What's your next memory in terms of from Vienna in terms of sticking out, you know, something that's really significant?
Well, coming back after Vienna, the contrast was the next memory I have of New Zealand after we left the centre of culture in Europe and the world in some ways, was to be in a small country town where my parents were batching with their brothers and sisters, Len and Grace, living in their house. And if I walked out the gate, I could walk along State Highway 1, because traffic was so scarce, to the shops, and there was no stones on the road, and there was potholes big enough for naked children to be swimming in them, paddling in them.
Yeah.
And these were Māori kids. And so the contrast from that to that was just really interesting for me.
Was it scary?
No, it was just spacey.
Yeah.
I think, wow, there's really different parameters here. Yeah.
And did you join the kids in the puddle?
No. No, I was older. That, you know, they're toddlers.
Yeah. But again, you made friends in the time frame that you were there. Always and then moved on again.
Fitted in, yeah. We got kicked out of that town by the fundamentalist people because my father had the gall to explain the theory of evolution to the kids. And they were saying, he's saying we had tails and we evolved from monkeys. The same stuff Darwin got. We just got blacklisted.
In 60. The 60s, yeah. 1960.
Yeah.
And you literally got kicked out.
Well, life became unpleasant.
Yeah. It was the only option.
Jim was always looking for... He'd go into a school and try to move it ahead and improve it. And once he got as far as he could get, he'd lose heart. He'd think, well, what's the point of trying anymore? So he'd look for another progressive school, a place where there's scope to move, and he'd move on.
What was he like as a person? Was he warm-hearted? Was he
abrupt? I would like to know.
Yeah.
He had a big part of himself that was dispassionate or removed. Yeah.
So he wasn't warm?
No, he was warm. He'd cuddle us and so on, and he had a great sense of humour and join in, but I don't think he did much disciplining of the kids, for instance. He'd back off and leave it to Irene. I don't know. I'd love to have known him as an adult. Mm. See, I left home to another country, and so I had very little interaction with him by the time I'd grown up.
Yeah. If you had a problem as a youngster, could you go to him with it?
Yeah. Yeah, he was very reasonable and there, but he worked, he's a teacher, you know, so he had a lot of marking to do after hours and stuff like that, and then he had all his activist commitments. We'd have fun folding posters and the pamphlets together and things like that, and he and I played soccer together. He coached a team that he played in, and I ended up playing in the team. It was the adults team, and I was only 12 or 14 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, it was quite fun. So we did soccer together. I'd drive to watch his matches and stuff.
So the majority of your childhood was that? Well, you said 32, so there was no majority probably. But where did you live for the majority of your life? You know, where is it? New Zealand?
The main stops. Yep, most of it was New Zealand. But by the time I was 2, we were in Melbourne. By the time I was 4, we were back in Auckland. By the time I was 6, we were in Vienna. And by the time I was 8... by the time I was 4. So near my time scheme's not very accurate. But we went from Melbourne to Auckland twice, I think, before we went to Vienna and then back to Kaikoi, which is Northland, and then down to the central Waikato and Otoranga, and then back to Auckland and shuffled around in there for 4 years, for high school pretty much, and did the last year of upper school in Adelaide, and then I left home to go to uni in New Zealand, and they were supposed to follow me, but never made the break.
Never made the break.
Put down roots and...
Did you, your dad talk about his parents at all?
Oh, yeah.
Did he have a stable lifestyle as he was a child, as he was growing up?
Well, I think his father was very similar to Jim in being removed from the family or a dispassionate person in a lot of ways. He's like when my sister went to teachers' college, they'd say to her, "Oh, you're Tom Gale's granddaughter." And she got sick of this because she was also a lot of other people's progeny and didn't want to be, she wanted to be known of as herself. But he was iconic in the union movement in New Zealand, in the railways in particular. But also he worked with Joe Hill in America and an international activist. And Irene's father was active and his mother was active. And then their parents were itinerant cobblers, I think, getting kicked out of town after town for being activists. So this heritage goes right back of the male was the spokesman in a lot of cultures and or a lot of, you know, like Edith was a feminist, but society was more willing to listen to Stan because he was a man. Yeah, all that crap.
So do you consider yourself an activist now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a straight talker.
And did any of your siblings rebel from that sort of lifestyle? I don't suppose
I'll have to pass on that one.
That just occurred to me. That's none of my bloody business. No,
I get myself in trouble and it becomes subjective too.
Of course. I'll just erase all of that. It just crossed my mind that quite often people rebel from the lifestyle of their parents. Mm,
that's what happened with a lot of Irene siblings.
And they end up quite the opposite.
Mm. Yeah.
But, if anybody wants to talk about that themselves, they're
quite able to. What we were talking about before, Sue, about the ways of being activists is changing now.
Yes.
And it's not so much standing on the corner with pamphlets and placards as being outspoken.
Yes.
All throughout life. And I think all our siblings are that, all my siblings.
Yeah, outspoken, and a whole lot of it involves writing now.
Right.
I think, you know, with social media particularly.
Right, yes. Well, I've noticed that with my daughter, Facebook.
Even if it's abbreviated writing, it's still, it's putting your views down and sharing them.
Mm. And guiding which way the flow of the conversation goes too, just pulling it over and there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's very interesting to see. And
it is.
The thing I love about the internet is that I have the same access as Bill Gates or anybody else.
That's right.
It's not something that you need some money, but you don't need a lot of money.
Yes.
To do it, so it's there for pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
Which I love. But anyway, that's getting off the track.
Off the track, yes. Okay, so dealt with Vienna.
And I guess New Zealand and moving back and forth, but the Springboks tour was a very significant. Well, Irene talks about it as a very significant event.
Okay.
In her life, but she also talks about it as a defining moment in family life.
Mm. I guess that was one of the turning points as far as giving me free rein as an adult was the Adelaide Springbok game where I was, like, I'd been attending meetings and doing posters and all that set up stuff in a group environment, but then I ended up in a separate group who were supposed to get onto the field and try and chain ourselves together, and there was no way that Jim and Irene could protect me and my sister. They were happy for us to go out and look after ourselves in a fairly risky situation. Yeah, so that was a turning point there for us.
So they were happy for you to do that? They were proud of you?
Yeah, it wasn't one of those things where we gnashed our teeth and had lots of debriefs and and anxiety about it. It was just, they were comfortable.
How did you announce that you were going to do it?
I think we were just at the planning meeting together and got split up. We'll go here and you go there and you go there, and it just seemed natural, the best appropriation of our capabilities, best use of our capabilities.
Were you frightened?
Oh, yeah. I had six cops in a circle around me, kicking me for about 5 minutes. I was frightened. But, yeah.
So, kicking you?
I stood on the railing and dived out into a row of cops around the edge of the field that were like four or five deep. And they broke my fall and then stood back and just kicked me for about 5 minutes and then picked me up and carried me off the field and tried to trash me underneath the thing into the stadium.
Okay. Were you injured?
No, I'm quite a good martial artist.
Yeah,
I blocked everything. They wrecked one shoe.
And that's all?
Yeah.
And what do you mean they tried to put...
Oh, they had a hand each and a leg each. So four guys had me and they ran and they had my face downwards. So I'm running, my face just off the ground. And there's a concrete tunnel that goes underneath the grandstand to the changing rooms, which is where they're arresting people.
Where was this?
Adelaide Grandstand.
Adelaide Oval?
Yeah. And so as they went down the tunnel, they had this unconscious agreement that they'd face plant me in the bottom of the tunnel. So they accelerated in the bottom. They lowered my arms and legs. But they weren't the only ones who picked up on that. I did too. So as I did that, I just arched pulled my arms and legs downwards. So I lifted my face up and it didn't work at all. So, bugger, they carried on.
So their aim was to make you lose some skin?
Oh, yeah, and some teeth and my nose. And yeah, they ran full speed down and then dropped me basically. But they didn't say anything. They just intuitively thought of it and I was linked in too. I intuitively realised what they were going to do. I don't think so.
Where did you end up?
Oh, they just charged me and released me.
So when they, after the tunnel?
Oh, they chucked me out in the street. Yeah.
Oh, they didn't arrest you then?
No, they charged me and released me there, yeah.
And charged you and released you? Yeah. After that sort of brutal treatment?
Well, yeah. they
just off you go then? Yeah. That's bizarre.
Yeah, no. I had to then go around and try and find somebody to link up again. It's a bit hard outside, but we did.
You must have been shaking like a leaf.
Yeah, just totally wired with adrenaline.
Yeah.
But concussed or something, but shock, I suppose.
And how did you find everybody again?
I don't remember. I went to someone's garden and got onto a fence so I could see, and there were some other people who were protesters there, and talked to them and managed to get back. Got a ride from someone, ended up at the university where everyone got together. Yeah.
And amongst your family, was anyone else mistreated?
No. It was my next sister, my eldest sister, was with me. We were supposed to be in the same crew. There was like six of us all going to go over and train together. And nobody wanted to go in one at a time. It wouldn't work. We had to go together. And so I said, okay, we'll go on the count of three. So one, two, and as I said three, I stepped up onto the rail. And the cops, you hear me, because they had to shout all this. I was just shouting in their face. And as Jenny went to follow me, someone else said, oh, don't do that. He said, look what they're doing to him. Yeah, true. And so then no one else followed either. So
you served as an example.
Yeah.
And what did they charge you with?
Oh, just disorderly behaviour. I've been released three or four times for first offence because it was pre-computers. And I've never been arrested before.
Yeah. So were the protesters outnumbered by police, or was it equal?
Yeah, it would have been close.
Yeah,
they had a massive number. They went right around that side of the oval, three or four deep, all in right gear. And
did they harass people who were just standing there with placards? No. So it was only people who took action?
And they needed to focus on that because otherwise, there were so many people who wanted to go on, they were stretched.
Yeah.
I think they were stretched. There were people getting on. They get around the edges. Yeah.
Did the game go ahead?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of smoke on it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Who won?
Oh, God knows. Me. Us. We won.
I should look it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel that? Did you have a sense of victory?
Oh, yeah. 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 It was enough to make our statement. We never dreamed we'd be able to stop it like they did in Hamilton.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. As we were saying before, it's very much of a time
path. Yes.
That sort of thing wouldn't happen now.
No. No, that's right.
Yeah. You'd be whisked away before and goodness knows what would happen.
Yeah. And so that was the end of that Springbok tour for me. And then when I went over to university in New Zealand, there was the Springbok tour there. So I got heavily involved with that. We had an organisation, Holt All Races Tours, which was a student organisation. We'd been involved with them before we went over to Australia because they came on to care demonstrations. I fitted right in there, and we had agent provocateurs, undercover people in our executive. So it was very tricky.
What, infiltrating? How did you know?
Oh, just stuff that they knew. Because they didn't have those sophisticated listening devices in those days. They'd find out stuff that could only be found and by someone being there. And so it was very difficult to run the group because we were doing civil disobedience. Yeah, so we'd do things like plan to block an arcade in the main street, which is Queen Street, and then offer honorary black passes to let people through, to know what it was like to be, because New Zealand did offer honorary white passes to Maoris to play in South Africa. Although the South African government did. You can be an honorary white. Oh, gee, thanks. So we thought we'd return it and tell people they could be honorary blacks. We told them we're going to the second lane in Queen Street. So we marched down and headed down the street and turned to the first one. And there was only four of us knew that we were going to the first one. So we got everything set up and the police were all down the second one because they knew from our moles, but they had the wrong location because we'd given them false information.
So no one told the moles?
Well, there was only four people in the whole march who knew it was the first arcade. But students are willing to be impulsive and follow a big, we screeched to a halt in a truck and pulled off these great big barricades and raced down this avenue amongst shoppers. And one of them got out of control. We were travelling at quite a speed with adrenaline and so on, and we piled in this jeweller's plate glass window. If we'd broken it, would have been chaos. The charges we'd have got. There's this boom, and it shook and wobbled. Oh, God. Yeah. And then we set up in there and ran it through. And the four people who'd set it up disappeared. And changed clothes and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And the police couldn't arrest us because they didn't know who'd set it up.
Yeah.
So we did things like that.
So you never came back to Australia to live after that, did you?
No. We stuck to the plan. Yeah. Everyone else we need.
Yeah.
Just me and my sister stayed over there.
Was it because of what happened here at that tour? Did that just, help you make a decision to leave?
No. Socially, I think New Zealand's lagging 5 years behind Australia as far as being taken over by McDonald's and the corporates. Yeah. And that gave us a head start working there. And it was a culture we were more familiar with. We'd spent so much time there.
Yeah. Do you have fond memories of Australia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the place. Yeah. Love the people. Yeah. No, I do. Yeah, this is a beautiful city.
Adelaide. Yes. Yeah. It's very easy to get around.
Yeah. And I love the natural world, the strength of the desert.
Yeah. Well, you obviously come back quite often to visit Irene anyway.
No, not very often. Every 3 years or something.
Every three years.
Yeah, it's got a while. Yeah.
And she travels over there quite a bit.
Well, she said she's given up. It's too hard doing that long flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any other memories that you have, particularly of her? as, you know, as a child or as a young adult, of her, you know, she must have developed some amazing strategies to get by.
Yeah. No, I strongly remember how much she struggled. She had a lot of time being unhappy. It wasn't a happy life. But she was also, you know, she could be really good. I guess it's a bit like a depressive mentality. She's have times when she was really depressed and other times when she was really fun. She's always been a lateral thinker and a free spirit. And,
yeah.
And that's been really, really good for me. It's helped, she's taught me so much about how to cope with life.
She looks back on everything quite fondly now. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you do. At the time, yeah. It probably would have been incredibly hard.
Yes, that's right.
But now it's a fond memory of it, which is a good thing.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
It makes it all much more pleasant.
Yeah.
I'll erase that too. Yeah, is there anything else that you'd like to add? It's really interesting to hear it. Like, it's always different. People see things through through different lenses, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's interesting to hear it because Ariane's version is almost a romanticised version.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, we're both romantics.
Yeah. but you just know from bits that she adds that it wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't all roses.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And she doesn't embellish things, make them dramatic more than they were sometimes.
So how did you hear about your dad's death?
How did I hear? Must have been by phone. Yeah. We were living way out in the sticks. The property was still on, but it was... We'd only go to one town once a month in those days. Irene must have rung up and told me.
Because he'd not long before that been in New York, hadn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Were you aware of him having a bad heart?
No. He's the fittest person I've ever met.
Yeah.
No, I remember him racing all around the soccer field, running everything else in the field into the ground and still... bouncing around his toes, you know, just such a fit guy.
So a heart attack was completely out of the blue?
Yeah. I think it's well on the cards he was poisoned. There's so many people in that era who died of heart attacks. Yeah.
That's a really scary thought.
It is, and it's quite a mindfuck. You really don't know how to process it because you don't know it's real.
Yeah.
And you don't know, you can't prove it or disprove it. It's just one of those high probability things.
Yeah.
And I think that's enough, really, rationally. It's horrendous that was going on. It doesn't really matter whether it was my father who got or not. The chances are that I'd love to have done it to him because he was such a skillful person at bringing people together. Get a room full of people and get them to agree time and time again, you know.
And so he was a great orator.
Yeah, he was really good at reading people, finding common ground and showing people that common ground was there, which is an amazing gift.
It is.
Yeah, I watched him from the age I had the patience to sit through a meeting. Yeah, I can remember going to meetings
and you could see... Like him employing a strategy to do this and see it working.
Yeah. Well, you always listen to your father. What's he doing? Why is he doing that? Why is he saying that?
Yeah.
How's that fit into what that guy's saying? And it all just clicks together. Yeah. Oh. Fancy that. it's very, very clever. Or gifted.
Are there any recordings of him talking?
Well, Irene's got oodles of them scattered amongst tape recordings of, you know, every time he's on TV, she'd clip the recorder on, but they're amongst Magnum PI and stuff, and she hasn't got the time to wade through all the recordings because she never sorted them out. She's got a pile of DVDs this high with snippets of him in there.
along with all sorts of other things that she recorded.
Yeah. There would be recordings of conferences that somebody facilitated, but no, I haven't. Yeah.
I'd love to listen to some.
Yeah.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
Work on her to get to.
Yeah.
Get to them, because it'd be really good to add some of that into the history.
That's right. Yeah, I was looking at some photos of him speaking at a student or university meeting to persuade the students to block the sale of South African oranges in the cafeteria. So, you know, it's a low-key thing where or the SACA or someone decided to go into the university. It's probably some of the students said, why don't you do that? So, the photos of him standing there in front of the crowd and just looking at his body posture and what a confident speaker he is and the confidence and the strength. It's nice to see.
Yeah, I'll have a yantra about that, see if we can get some, because it would be great to add. So have you got anything else that you'd like to, that you'd like sort of recorded for?
Right.
What do you call it? Perpetuity or something?
Yeah, posterity.
Posterity, yeah.
Yeah. Like the suggestion that caught me flat-footed a little bit. I mean, Irene suggested it 2 days ago.
Yeah, because, yeah, it takes you, it's just come from out of the blue.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that you don't think about on a day-to-day basis.
No. One of the things, a memory that sprung to mind was pretty left field or random, but being under four and I've been playing outside. We lived in the middle of the countryside. It had been a school day. Closed the school and left the schoolhouse behind, so it was just paddocks around. And it was just one sister and me and my mother. And Jim was off 5 kilometres away to the new school teaching. I got lonely, decided to go and find Irene, so come pattering into the house and, Mum, where are you? Can't find her anywhere, and look in this room, look in that room. Goodness, starting to get a bit worried and look a bit further and ran into one room, one of the bedrooms, and she flattened herself against the wall just inside the door, and as I came in she goes, it reduced me to tears, and so she has to comfort me. But yeah, that's the free spirit. I'll hide from the little bugger. Yeah. So about 20 years later, she flew into Auckland Airport and I saw her walking out of the immigration area. So there was, happened to be a shoulder-high screen that you walk past. So I hid behind that and she came past that. I jumped out, did that to her, and she gave this god-awful scream, collapsed into my arms laughing, and all the security people and so on thought, oh God, what's going on? Oh, just some crazies, you know, turned away again.
This is the way they say hello.
yeah. And Jim's brother's there waiting to greet her too, and he walks up and he said, God, the only way I could upstage that would be your down trail. I think I'll spare you.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So we had a lot of fun.
She talks about one time when, I think it was you, the only way that she could get you to listen was for her to swear.
Oh, okay.
Do you recall that?
No, I mean, recall her swearing a lot.
Yeah, she said
passionate person.
It was the only way to get
right
to get you to listen, and so she was standing there calling you to come back because you were a long way away.
Right.
That's when you were living in that place, and Jim was teaching at the school further away. And she was calling and calling and calling you, and you wouldn't respond. So she started swearing her head off, and I think it was the local priest or something.
That's right.
Came along and
I had to pretend to not hear it.
She said she was using some very colourful language.
The priests have to do it habitually, don't they?
They have that habit of just popping up.
Yes, and pretending I didn't notice that other people live a different life than theirs.
Yeah, and she was just horrified after that, because she'd forevermore, when she was there, she was that woman who swore at her kids.
Yeah. remember another time she was absolutely horrified. We did a lot of hosting people from work, you know, the very socially conscious pair, Jim and Irene, and they had cooked meals for newly arrived teachers and things like that. And this particular time there was a couple from Indonesia or somewhere in Asia, and the woman in particular didn't have very good English, and she arrived very humbly in the middle of the kerfuffle, the panic of getting organised as people are arriving. Iron was still tidying up or something, cooking, I suppose. And Stephen came in carrying this offering from the woman on his hands. And unfortunately, she'd just sent him out with some rubbish, and the woman had bought some brand new wrap to go around the offering that looked like this rubbish he'd taken out. Looked as though it was rotten. Looked like rotten something or other. And he came in this in front of her, and she turned around and said, "Oh God, Stephen, get that thing outside." And this woman's right behind him. Oh. Stephen was just appalled. You know, what could he say? And the woman was so offended, and Irene could not think how to patch it up because the language was so poor.
Yeah,
it was just tragic.
And so she couldn't patch it up.
No, that woman never really got over it.
Yeah,
it was really sad.
Yeah, that is sad. That happens with the language, doesn't it?
And
the,
yes, yeah. And with someone who's passionate or yeah, Irene's just out there.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, "Oh, Stephen, just get that outside."
Yeah.
"Oh, for Christ's sake, Stephen, get rid of that rubber." Yeah, poor Stephen too.
Yeah, he would have been horrified.
Mm.
Well, any more, or is that?
Bits and bobs.
47 minutes.